On this week's show, When Keeping It Real Goes Right, with Josh Levy from Document Crunch. All right, Josh Levy, I wrangled you. I got you on. Where are you coming at us from today?
Live at the Document Crunch headquarters here in Atlanta, which is empty on a Friday, actually. But, and also, I should say, probably not going to be our headquarters for too much longer because we're making a much bigger investment here. And Trimble wants to open up a much bigger office than what I got capacity for. So we already got Trimblers in left and right almost every day. It's been buzzing around here, but this beautiful office is going to probably not be ours, you know, not right away, but next period of time.
Yeah, well, you're leading into where we're going to go with this one and how Keeping It Real goes right. Before we dive into all of that, you guys know to check us out on youtube.com/@TheContentCrew, but also follow us on social, listen into things, because we're going to be out there on the road quite a bit. You'll see yours truly and a few of the others out on the road. Come up, talk to us, tell us about your stories. Who knows, you might even end up being a guest. Are you trying to reach the innovators and decision makers in construction technology? Then look no further than sponsoring the Contech Crew. That's right, we're taking new advertisers. Email us at advertising@thecontechcrew.com to learn more. All right. So normally, Josh, I let the guests give us a rundown, give us a where you're from, your story, how'd you get here. We've had you on a few times. People know a little bit about that, but I don't know that they know the connection. So I'm going to start this off. How did I meet Josh Levy? And it was at the Association of Union Contractors in St. Louis is where the event was. Josh, you'd have to give me the year. It's the post-COVID.
I know exactly when it is because as of today, I'm exactly 5 years full-time as the CEO of Document Crunch. So if I were a betting man, it was June of 2021. And I could probably find pictures somewhere. It was in St. Louis. June of 21 would have been the year.
Yeah, and we were in St. Louis and we were both working out in the gym. And you said, hey, can I chat with you? And we went for a walk and you told me your story and the crunch beginnings. You guys were like 3 to 6 people at that point, weren't you?
Yeah, I was employee 3 at that time.
Employee 3. And man, it has been a fantastic journey to watch and be this close, to consider you a friend, but also to consider you someone I get to learn from, a company I got to watch and grow. So go back to that day yourself and just talk a little bit about that early vision. Because immediately when I talked to you, I was drawn to like, oh, there's something here. So give people that brief, like, what was that like in the beginning?
You know, man, I don't know if this is good or not, but you actually got me a little choked up right now. I remember, gosh, man, I wasn't expecting you to do this to me, but the decision to take the leap and go full time into this, like what I knew was, you know, a big opportunity at that time. You know, I'll just share with you, my wife, Mika, she was the one who pushed me to do it. You know this, I was a corporate lawyer, had a good cushy thing. I was scared, man. And you know, if I'm being totally honest with you, in June of 21, as bullish as I was on Document Crunch and like this idea, that would be the best way I would describe it at the time, this idea that we had, bet you at that moment in time, Jeff, actually, I know, I was still wondering whether I had made the right decision.
I can say, listening to you, I knew you were still wrestling with, had you really made the right decision? There was all the signs and all the, like you believed in it. But I think that's actually what drew me to your story and to continue to talk to you and say like, this is somebody I'm going to stay close to, because there wasn't that bravado of like, there was none of that bravado. It was very like, I'm taking a leap in my life. I believe this is a problem. I know it's a problem, right? But I think I'm going to be able to improve it.
Problem space, the vision. I had a lot of conviction in that. I wouldn't have made the leap if I didn't. But at that moment in time when I saw you at the gym and I knew who you were because, you know, I was new to the construction tech scene, first time founder, you know, the real reason why I was probably seeking out to get some time with you at that point in time was to maybe anchor to somebody who had a broader perspective than I did, who, you know, man, I came from the legal world. We're trained to think about the worst case scenario. And at that moment in time, man, there's just no doubt. I mean, I remember it, but there was just no doubt that I was still like, huh, I believe in what I'm doing, but this is crazy. And I don't know that I have what it takes to be a tech guy, a CEO, a founder, you name it. And I sought you out at that moment because I was looking for folks that did, that had seen the full journey. I had not. I literally had not, except maybe, you know, watching like Silicon Valley or, you know, reading grandiose stories of what happens in the news with, you know, Meta or whatever. But I had no experience. And I'm just getting choked up because you probably grounded me and locked me in a little bit more at that moment in time. And like, if you told me 4 years and 11 months ago that we'd be sitting here on the other side of what this journey has meant to me, to 100 crunchers, to 500 customers, and I'd like to think for our industry, if you told me that we'd be here 4 years and 11 months later, I could not intellectually say that I would have agreed with you. I could say that would be a dream, but it's just so amazing when you look back and you think about what it means to really wake up every day with conviction in your heart. What it means to really wake up every day and think about just wanting to take care of the people around you, what that energy does, the movement, one person at a time, one relationship at a time, somebody like you, think about just the force of nature that can become. And I just have to share, man, this has been, to be honest with you, I've said this to my wife, so I'm not going to get in trouble. I'm a dad, I'm a husband. Being able to see the reaction of the crunchers to what this news meant for them, this acquisition meant for them personally, being able to see how the industry has reacted to what we've done, this is the greatest experience of my life. And the biggest learning is just how much is possible, you know, when you really, really believe and you really care. So anyway, man, you brought me to maybe more of a sentimental state than you were intending to. So I apologize if I derailed us, but you just got me a little choked up. Reminiscing.
This is where I wanted you to go, because to me, that was the most interesting. You said it, and I'll bring your language back, because I really do believe like language and the way things are, people approach things are what distinguishes us as we look back. And you said you sought me out. You sought out a lot of people, and then you did the thing that at the time, again, 5 years ago, I wouldn't have even been able to tell you that it was you seeking out and then actually listening. I'll never forget a multiple times of just being like, wow, I said something, or more importantly, I heard you repeating what other people said to you, that it's kind of cool because our careers and this journey mixed with a lot of people we knew together. So I knew who these people who were giving you advice and you were repeating, and I'm like, he's listening. And at that point in time, like, we had been close to PlanGrid when they exited, you know, the crew itself had been around it, and we'd watched the building connected and the others, but personally, I didn't have those connections. I didn't know the secret sauce, right? Like, I still at that point in time believed that it was the technology or was the product market fit, right? And those are important things. Like, you can't get here without it, but you cannot get here with it. And in looking back for me, that was the secret sauce of what you were building and how you were building it. Because it didn't go smooth all the time, right? There's a lot of bumps in the road along the way.
I think you nailed it, man. I'd say it all the time. Document Crunch is entirely, the success has been entirely powered by people. You know, when I was sitting with you in St. Louis about 5 years ago, there's no other way to say it. I wasn't qualified to do what, you know, I think I was able to do the last several years. But I'll share another anecdote. Probably 3 years ago now, one of my lead investors was talking to me and he was like, I just cannot believe how quickly you have grasped some of the financial concepts of, you know, software. I met you, he met me at the beginning, right around when you did, you know, you had no clue about any of this and you have picked this up so fast. You've become such a, you know, like just good business person in this regard. And something stuck with me and I told him this, I'll tell you this too. So if you would have talked to me when I was 8, 9, 10 years old, you would have known that I probably memorized every single statistic. I knew every single player, you know, in the NBA and in Major League Baseball. If you asked me what, you know, Ken Griffey's batting average was and how many home runs, I would know everything. I loved it. I would stay up late. I would watch the games. I collected cards. I would read about it. I would just pour myself into it. Fast forward to 5 years ago when I became the CEO and I was, I guess, 38 years old because I'm 43 today. For the next, call it 28 years, I went through the world and I did just fine in the world. I went to law school. I graduated with honors. I've had good jobs. I've gotten promotions, you know, all these things. But I just kind of went through the world. And then I found this thing, Document Crunch, and I just lit up on the spot when he said this to me. And for the first time in my life, since I was that boy, I actually gave a shit about something and was passionate to the level that I wanted to learn. And I would take every opportunity. Chris Parrish, who, you know, ran Revenue, a huge asset here, who's now has a hell of a role on the other side of Trimble. He loves to tell people, because he thinks it's hilarious, that I read Salesforce before I go to bed at night. So I know the demos. I don't do it as much anymore as when he started. But he loves telling people that. And so I guess going back to what you were saying, if you have an open mind and you're willing to learn and you seek out great people, wow, what a big wild world there is out there. And yes, man, there's like so lucky. The investors, the employees, our customers, then a certain type of person that we've been able to attract into our orbit. And honestly, the thing that I'm so excited about, Jeff, is this is only continuing with the amazing team at Trimble. When I started really getting to know them, I realized that like this was just an incredible opportunity. But yeah, you're right. I continue to try and seek out great people around me.
You've always been able to do it. And I know it as a road warrior out there. We see the dirty world that is this contact hustle. You know, we're out there and you know, a lot of it is glitz and glamour on this end and in the LinkedIn thing. But like, it's a grind. People are out there hustling and it is not easy. And you can just tell from groups what the culture supporting them looks like by how they operate, by how they show up. That passion that you have to go learn a bunch of things you didn't know, but feel comfortable not knowing them. You see these people showing up at the booth, at a webinar, whatever it is with this, you can see the energy. They're, you know, look at, and I challenge anybody who does this out there, like walk the floor right as it opens and look around the room and you will know almost, I mean, it's not 100%, right? But you will know by looking around at the faces, at the attitudes, at how the people at the booths are feeling, what the culture supporting them looks like. And that's an interesting piece because the technology was important, right? And the problem was important. And, you know, again, it doesn't happen without really good product market fit. But again, a lot of it doesn't happen because you don't see that. And so I wonder when, I mean, I know early on you were seeking people out and you were building it, but I can't even tell you when the Crunchers thing happened, when it became a thing. I knew it was a thing. And then you named it. And I was like, oh yeah, that's a thing. When in this process did that become a part, the understanding of how the company was going to be successful? Because that is the other thing, like success, it breeds success. It is one of the keys to it.
So anybody who's been with me for a long time would have heard in those moments that I was telling you, I was doubting myself, you know, and that's the real talk, man. Like, yeah, half the time I thought I was crazy. I actually remember being at that conference. I won't name it. I still haven't closed one of those customers. Like, I've never been able to win them over. You get told no enough, can kick you in the pants a little bit. But anyway, to answer your question, my company, I don't say it as much, man, you're bringing me back to memory lane. But in those early days, you would have heard me say all the time, there's zero chance that I left my cushy job and have done something nuts, jumped in the deep end here to have started a company that sucks for our people. Zero chance. I flipped that over time to, you know, to saying that I have three whys, because people would ask me all the time, and I'll just share with you. I mean, my three whys, and this is actually why I'm so excited, because I've arrived here having still fulfilled my three whys. I've got to be in a great place with my family. I've got a wife and two kids. If they were done with me because I was on the road too much or whatever, I would throw my keys and walk out. I'd be done. The second why was, this has to be a great place for the crunchers. And we'll come back to that. And the third why was, I just didn't want to turn into an asshole, you know, which is easy to do when you start having success. It's human nature, honestly. So it's like gravity. You have to like, or aging, you have to, you know, do your part to fight it. But anyway, going back to the thing about the crunchers, it was very apparent to me that there was no chance I was going to do this alone. And therefore, I needed to make sure that I created an environment that people wanted to be with. And that came up a little bit naturally to me. But I would say that, honestly, Jeff, going back to like applying learnings, J.E. Dunn, when I came and moved here to Atlanta 11 years ago to come work at J.E. Dunn, Dan Kaufman, who's the president of the Southeast region, he really like kind of revolutionized that company and made this like a cultural beacon and really like modernize the approach to how this big general contractor was operating. And so I would say that, like, while I'd always been very relational, you know, my best friends from my childhood are still my best friends. Like, I just always have had deep relationships with folks along the way. I'd say I probably learned a little bit of like culture at scale. I took a lot of from J.E. Dunn, you know, how do you communicate? How do you look to recognize people? How do you create an environment where people feel like they've got some flexibility to live their best life while still doing great work? So I kind of learned some of that. Then the lodestar was, or the guiding star was at that early time was, yeah, there's zero chance I left like being a well-paid lawyer to create a company that sucks. Like, you don't hear about this. You were very astute in noticing some of the energy at the booths early on. That's real, man. You don't get to the retention numbers or the sales numbers. You don't get that without people that are out there super fired up to be a part of it. But, you know, very early on, and I won't harp on this too much, I did things that maybe were financially irresponsible, but that were culture, like, frankly, like columns that we ended up building this company on. Like, it was really important to me. We had outstanding benefits really early. Why? Because I was taking a huge pay cut to come join Document Crunch, and I was going to be living on savings. At least I want to know if my kids went to the doctor, like, they'd be okay. And, like, I just knew that, like, I was like, there's probably other people that are going to feel that too. So, you know, we made a huge investment in benefits early on. We, you know, I don't need to get into all the ins and outs of it. We did a lot of things very intentionally early on. And then it just kept snowballing. It kept snowballing. And there's, believe me, man, there was a lot of opportunities along the way to deviate from that path, because it's not always expedient. It's not always the easy thing to do to have the hard conversation when you let someone go, but you do it with dignity. It's not always financially responsible, but it just became this thing that I just knew. It was like part of my operating system. This has to be a great place for crunchers. So I've always started with that in mind.
It's a great lesson for everybody listening. It's those things that provide the people that are representing you, who are out there becoming the brand. When they feel supported, they make the right decision when you're not there, right? You can have values and ethos and statements, but really it comes down to, if they feel taken care of, then they're going to do right. And that's sort of a key component to it. You know, you got bigger. This is something, again, I think we're ending up talking more to the founders or the people who want to grow things. Because, by the way, you did hit on something. Like, I really think the fact that a lot of what you learned about the culture and about growth and about how to do this at scale came from J.E. Dunn. I think the construction industry and people listening should understand that that is possible. In not just technology, right? We see it as in tech, but it's actually possible in construction. It's possible in any business. And I wish more people decided they just didn't want to work or create things that suck, because it's no fun, right? And by the way, when people are supported and having fun, they're the most creative, and that's when the real work happens. So
I have to share this story about one of the icon crunchers who you know well, Chad Waite. So we were having some of these discussions with Trimble around dimensions, and Chad came out to man the booth, you know, with some other crunchers, but he was the first one out to Las Vegas this year. And he got there the day night before the conference. I'm going to botch this story a little, but he learned that our booth wasn't delivered. So this is one of our biggest trade shows and our booth wasn't delivered. Of course, Chad has no idea what's going on. So I'm out there with some meetings and, you know, some of the Trimble executives came by our booth the first day of the conference. What people don't know is that what Chad did when he found out, this is like a Sunday night at like 11 p.m. He gets in and realizes our booth wasn't delivered. So he goes to like Kinko's and does some crazy stuff. I'm going to botch it, but just imagine that Chad's up till like 3 a.m. and he printed out all kinds of crazy stuff and he ended up wrapping the space with this these crazy graphics, totally makeshift, and our booth looked amazing. And when the executives came by, I told them that story because I was like so proud of that he did that. But that's what it's about, man. Most people would just want to go to bed and be like, I hope it comes, but if not, oh well. Not Chad, man. Guy refused to lose. And that, if I could say, that's what being a cruncher has been about. Refuse to lose, wanting to always do the right thing. And I do think a lot of that just stems from, I mean, I know this, but if you talk to Chad, he'd say this is one of the better experiences of his life. And it's like, if you can create great life experiences for people, you're going to get the best out of them. And I thought like it was kind of cool because when the executives came by, I was like, yeah, that's how we roll. That's what Document Crunch is about. I was so proud, but how cool is that, man?
That is the classic Mike Tyson, right? It's all fun and games till you get punched in the mouth. What did he do? He got up and he did what he could do. Man, that hustle is key. So I want to take us into a bit of the crunch story. So I'm going to do my best to see if I can articulate this because I've been along the way, but you really came in with the idea that there was not enough focus and operational control over using the contract as a tool for construction companies of both sizes, GCs, trades, everybody. And initially the tool was there to review contracts and call out areas that might not be the best terms, et cetera, and allow people to not only quickly review and understand, but then decide on what they will, what they were and weren't open to accepting when it comes to risk, when it comes to contractual language, et cetera, et cetera.
You nailed it, but there's one other but. Maybe it was what they were or weren't willing to accept, or it was just that they needed a plan to manage a risk, because we're all business people, man, and construction's risky, being a founder is risky. And so sometimes it's not about, I can't take the risk. Sometimes it's just, but I better be prepared to manage the risk. So, but otherwise, you nailed it.
Well, that's a good one, because I had a buddy tell me, well, actually, I want that risk because that's where I make my money. It's just great that I use Document Crunch to know exactly what the risk is and accept the ones where I know I make the most money.
Someone told you that about Document Crunch?
Absolutely. Yeah, early on. I remember lots of signals along the way from people telling you, hey, I'm hearing great things out here about not what it is or what it looks like, but literally they're telling me how they're using it. And that's where I was like, oh, okay. So
that's cool,
this
man.
Thing's,
you just made my day.
And yeah. I tried to pivot you a few times and you did not. So I'll give you credit there. I'm like, hey, why don't we do this for this? And you're like, and that's cool and all, dude, but I'm staying here. So you stayed in your lane, but your lane grew eventually. And you adopted this idea from where it started to then not just operationalizing it, right? What you wanted to do in the beginning, but then actually getting ops people to use it. So not just surfacing the contract for the project managers, for the legal team, for anybody reviewing it and deciding on the risk, but then when things happened, doing something about it and understanding what contractually you need to do about it, making that quicker, faster in their hands. So that was kind of step two, if I'm not mistaken.
100%. And that's where most of the risk in construction is. You know, whether you have a fair contract or an unfair contract, whether you know about the risk or you don't know about the risk, if shit happens in the field and the team has to react, everything that they are obligated to do is tied up in the contract documents. And sometimes, a lot of times, teams just shoot themselves in the foot just by, they had a good contract, but they still didn't do the right thing. and therefore they end up giving money back, or worse, that non-compliance is where disputes happen. Because they say, it rained, of course I'm entitled to, you know, payment. And the owner says, but you didn't give notice, so you're actually going to pay me liquidated damages. And that's where disputes happen.
That is the next evolution, and I like this because there was probably pivots underneath, and I had that in the list of like, hey, where were the pivots? But ultimately, there was probably technology pivots, functional pivots, but from the outside, there wasn't pivots, there was evolutions. So you got there, and then you hit it. Zero disputes. This idea of zero disputes.
And stronger relationships. Well, keep going.
Yeah, but that was the zero disputes was based on the fact that all those other things led to better relationship. I'll never forget when, you know, I was going through this understanding contractual language, et cetera, while seeing you go through it and what I was doing at my gig. And I realized, like, we had always treated this contract like a weapon. And what Document Crunch was doing with it was giving us a foundation of how we're supposed to operate. But then it was up to us that we could take anything and operate poorly, or we could operate well. And where did that come from? Like, I've watched IPD, integrated project delivery projects, where everybody's supposed to be on the same team. And I've seen it where it's a well-oiled machine that crushes it. And then I have seen it where it's a failure. It's just a bunch of people housed in the same place that email each other and don't talk to each other. So doesn't happen. So that's where the light bulb went off. I was like, oh, that's what he's creating. And then you came out with this zero dispute. So talk about what that meant to you. And maybe, I know you're not there yet, right? Because this is a 5-year journey. You're not done. So this is your next view.
You're right. It wasn't a pivot, but it was dialing in maybe the focus on what I've been trying to create this entire time. So I think a lot about like the safety journey that our industry has gone on. You know, a light bulb went off for me when someone, I was speaking in New York City a few years ago, and someone said to me behind me, well, AI didn't build any of those skyscrapers behind you. Someone from the audience, you know, a New York contractor, kind of tough guy, said that. And I was like, that's a good point. But I said, but let's talk about those buildings behind me that weren't built with AI. You know what did happen? Some people died building those buildings. A lot of people got injured building those buildings. We used to have an industry that just accepted that industry, like incidences or injuries or something worse, fatality, was just part of our industry. And somewhere along the way, we said, enough is enough. This doesn't have to be the case. Why? Because we know how to take preventative and proactive measures to make this culturally unacceptable. So we can understand that construction is inherently unsafe, but we don't have to accept that there's incidences. And so this industry has gone on throughout my whole lifetime. It's been on this safety journey where like now it's like almost universally known that every workplace incident is one too many. Every job, you want to get people home safely to their families. You hear that everywhere. You know that. I don't have to tell you that. I believe that we have the exact same opportunity with disputes. I think that we've all just accepted that construction's inherently litigious, that people are going to be adversarial like throughout the process. And I think that that's just created completely unnecessary costs and friction for an industry who doesn't exactly have the best margins anyway. And I believe that I understand why it can be litigious, but I don't accept that it is litigious. And that is what I am trying to solve. So think about this as a safety movement, but grounded in the contract and grounded in what's at the core of what makes our industry unsafe and litigious. And that's what I'm solving for today. And our mandate has broadened and I am going big around that vision.
I'll take your analogy and I'll go further with it just because of the lucky experience that I've had of being around for most of that was in the safety movement. It was funny because, yeah, we don't accept it. We have culturally, I believe, as most of the industry, if not all the industry, said, no, we're not accepting that anymore, right? It is inherently dangerous work. We can't necessarily change all of that, but we can really focus on, you know, sending people home safely, doing everything we can to prevent all of that. But it was funny because a safety guy and I were doing a job walk and he stopped me and he said, that's great, you're right, but that's not what I sell. He's like, that's not actually what works here. He's like, let me show you what works here is that a safe job site which is a clean job site, and an organized job site is a more productive job site. It just inherently is. Not only is it safer, it's also more productive because we're following general rules that help one another be more productive. And to your point, spending time worrying about the contract and the litigious nature slows us down. And we have what in our industry? A productivity problem. We just can't be as productive as we want to be in every case because we don't have enough people as it is. And we do plenty to slow it down. And that's the idea of a zero dispute environment. To me, means we're going to achieve the highest level of productivity and performance that we can because we're driven to do it the right way. I can't wait till somebody's like, oh yeah, contractually, that's what we have to do. And we're alerting and we're doing this, but hey, I'm going to pick this scope up. I'm going to do that. I'm going to move this. We're going to go. And bam.
First of all, we're already seeing it. I can't tell you now how many customers on both sides of the aisle, general contractors and trades, will call us and say, we were negotiating this contract and we found out we were both using Document Crunch and it made it way easier for us to get to the right place. So that's number one. But going back to what you're saying about the labor shortage too, Jeff, anybody who's been in construction, you know, that's had a bad project knows that that just can suck the life out of you. That's the type of project that makes people want to leave the industry, not stay in the industry. Now, the corollary to that is, you know, at J.A. Dunn, one of the qualitative criteria that we used to use to determine whether a project was a good project or a bad project wasn't just how much money the project made. We used to ask, would the team do this project again? Would the team, like with the same, with the architect and the owner, we used to ask the participants, would the team run this back? So anyway, I think a lot about if you can make like those things more matter of fact, like you were just describing, and you have less opportunity to have the energy sucked out of you because you end up in some kind of a spat. It doesn't even have to rise to formal litigation. Just let's keep people productive and focused on the right things and remove some of that like bad energy. It's really important to me, hence the stronger relationships as well.
And this will be fun because to the longtime listeners and anybody who was at the roadshows in the early days, some of my I like to do a little bit of physical comedy while I'm talking on the stage and performing a bit. And I did this bit for the longest time where I physically was like, oh God, dude, that we got that done. All right. Oof. This thing's over. Okay. And then I was like, why do we have to end that way? Why can't we all high five and say, that was awesome. Let's go do it again. And the room busted out laughing, but then people were like, I would love to experience that once. And I'm like, and you've been coming back at this for 20 years? Wow. There's all the reasons in the world for it, but I think we can get there. And it takes a combination. And this is why, you know, we haven't talked much tech. We've talked about what impact we believe it should have and why. Because I think, again, that's the important part. You think about people inside of your organization a certain way, but you don't not think about your customers, think about the industry, think about construction. You apply that same thing, and so do the people around you that are developing the product, that are leading the product, that are selling the product, that are out there, because that whole thing feeds itself, man.
Well, I'll share with you, I mean, while we're shouting out folks that taught me some things along the way. So yeah, I mean, we got off to this really good start and people knew who we were and we had a really good culture. But as I was dialing in this vision, which I know you love, and it has caused a lot of people to stop, right? Once I unlocked that vision, it really started to create some things. So Steve Zahm, co-founder of Procore, gracious enough to, you know, mentor me over the last several years. And he said something to me a few years ago that stopped me in my tracks because we were known of having a good culture. But he stopped me in my tracks and he said, Josh, I need you to remember something. You are still a business and the culture serves the business. The business does not serve the culture. You are not in the business of having a good culture. You are in the business of doing whatever your vision is and the culture comes for that. And when he said that to me and he said, so you need to have a stronger, more clarified vision that you cascade or that you communicate more frequently. And it stopped me in my tracks. And he's right. And so now, since he gave me that advice, of course, we start every meeting with the vision. But to your point, Jeff, the types of people that we attract and that are willing to go to Kinko's at 3 o'clock in the morning are not just here because we are a good place. They are here because they are inspired to go drive toward that vision. That maybe sound a little bit harsh, but it is true. It is the essence of, I think, being an entrepreneur or a capitalist or whatever you want to call it. And when he said that to me, it really helped me dial in and know that I'd still, like, yes, culture is what I am about. They're my operating principles on how I go through my life. But the vision is what we are here to fulfill. And that's why you are a part of the Document Crunch and now the Trimble movement along with Document Crunch. That's the types of folks that I want here. I don't want people that are just lion-hearted, fiercely inspired, and growth-minded. Those are my core values. I want people here that get up every single day super excited about a construction industry with zero disputes and stronger relationships.
It's a nuanced point, and it's actually, yes, it might seem a little harsh. It's kind of like parenting. At times you got to be harsh because it's a very important piece, because I think if you look through the many startups that aren't here, some of them did not heed that, and or did they either did not get that advice, didn't follow that advice, or didn't understand it, because it's true. It is a business first. And remember, the business doesn't exist. The culture doesn't exist without the business. And that's the critical component.
The business gives you the right to have a culture.
And all those things are important.
We're hitting on two things, and we kind of hit it on reverse order. We started with culture, and now we're talking about the vision. I mean, this to me, you know, I know you wanted to talk about keeping it real, and you said it. I haven't pivoted. Yes, I've been able to better articulate my vision, but I haven't pivoted from day one. And that conviction that I had and the opportunity, that's real, man. And you see, yes, it's turbulent out there, man. There's disruptive forces. Let me say this. Every single year you hear about this crazy thing that's never happened before. In my 5 years doing this, every year is that. It doesn't ever end. It's every year there's something new. The venture markets have dried up. There's now large language models. There's tariffs. It doesn't matter. All there is turbulence. You see these companies out there that either don't have the culture, which we talked about, or you see them waver in the turbulence. A little bit of turbulence causes them to go this way when they were going that way before. And it's like, what are they doing and who are they? And I think that the two reasons why we've been successful is we have had a big, strong, convicted vision, and we built a culture around that. And I think those are like two of the main reasons why Document Crunch is where it is today.
I will agree. And I'm not going to dive further into it because we have a few more minutes. And what I really want to understand and let you tell folks is how you see that connecting to Trimble. We kind of got the why Trimble on the culture side, but what should we expect? I know there's lots of things you can't say, but I'm sure there's plenty you can say about why and where.
Well, let's start with the culture again. Let me just put a finer point on culture. We'll talk culture and opportunity. So let's just start culture. I've known Trimble now for years. They were an early investor in Document Crunch. We formed a strategic partnership with them. Across the board, you meet the people at Trimble. They're phenomenal. Once we started talking and I realized that they were serious, these are phenomenal, phenomenal people. I'm talking from the top all the way down and across that organization. I mean, again, you want some behind the scenes stories? Rob Painter, the CEO of Trimble, made it a point way before I was anything to spend time with me one-on-one, dinner, breakfast, being here saying, let's catch up for 15 minutes. The CEO of a publicly traded company. This is years ago. This is probably before we had 100 customers, right? I mean, and just getting to know him, you know, good guy, operator. Then you talk about, you know, Mark Schwartz, who runs their AECO software business. This is one of the greatest human beings you'll ever meet. And, you know, the Crunchers are all kidding now that they've gotten to know him. It's like, if you looked at me and you forecasted me into the future, sorry, Mark's a little older than me. Sorry, Mark. You know, we're like very similar in our approach, but I'm talking everyone from across that organization, you know, Lauren Smith, who runs the construction arm, John Finglin, who runs the ERP, the partnerships team, you name it. These are phenomenal people. 30 days in, it's incredible to see how just kumbaya the two teams are already. But now let's get to the opportunity. So I'm building an AI native You know, I think you would agree, we're probably viewed as one of the early leaders of the AI, you know, race in construction. And I've gotten this product velocity thing dialed in over the last few years. We've really been able to bring in a world-class team, and we're ripping. I think there's two other opportunities in this AI world. Product velocity is everything. So if you want to know how to win in this new AI world, you can move fast. But the other two areas I believe are the moats relate to distribution and data. And I believe that the Trimble AECO platform that has tens of millions of projects on it today, with architects, engineers, contractors, and owners that operates across the world, I think that that platform is like one in a million in the world right now. And you start to put our product velocity on top of that, and you think about all the things that we need to do, because every stakeholder has an interest in an industry with zero disputes. It's not just for contractors. Like going back to what we were saying about, you know, wanting to work with the team again, that's the architect, that's the owner. That impacts everybody's pro forma. Anyway, you combine a shared culture with the platform and the distribution, the reach, and the data that Trimble has, and now you put our Crunch AI, you know, super fast kind of jet ski on top of that, you are going to see something that is completely differentiated than anything that could ever be out there in the industry. It's already happening. I'll tell you, man, I knew the culture was going to be great. I knew that there was a big opportunity. Trimble is moving way faster than I thought they would reasonably want to move. Mark Schwartz is an absolute champion. I mean, this guy wants to win. He wants to win big. They brought the crunchers in because they know, talk about seeking out, you know, guidance or help or whatever you want to call it. They're relational. They saw our energy. They saw what we bring to the table. They see us and they value us. And what I would say is, I just got back actually from their headquarters this week, where I was out with the executive team, which I've now, you know, I guess I've joined Mark's executive team there. That's who I report to. And I even think that is, you know, so we're standing up a risk management and compliance category. Document Crunch is the first product, but I'm already building the second one, which you have to stay tuned, but I'll tell you, just come to Dimensions. I'm hiring 12 new roles right now. A bunch of crunchers are about to get promotions. This is wild. I'm in my beautiful office in Atlanta, which, you know, I moved into like a little over a year ago. Well, guess what? We're gonna need a 300 person office space here now soon. So we're starting to look for a bigger office. Like, they're in growth mode. And they kind of, I think, see us in a lot of ways, you know, as one of the last pieces to the puzzle. And I see the opportunity to now take that great product market fit that we have and that pull, and now you put it on just a massive, massive platform. And to me, I'll just share with you, it's clear as day that we're better together. And I'm actually surprised, like in a good way. I knew it was going to be great, but this is wild. The opportunity that we have is wild. And I intend to drive this industry to zero disputes and better relationships. And I intend to rally the industry around that. And I think that Trimble just gives us like 100x opportunity to do that from where we were at alone. And that's why we did this. And that's what the opportunity is. And it's already playing out in real time. You should watch LinkedIn, because a bunch of people are about to announce new roles here. But also, again, man, this isn't just going to be Document Crunch. This is a platform that stretches across the whole AECO ecosystem. And we're going to just connect every one of those workflows and every one of those stakeholders one at a time as fast as we can. And before you know it, man, this industry will have something that can really drive it to no disputes. And I'm really excited about that.
We could go on forever, but I'm letting you drop the mic right there. Normally, I ask people where they should go find out things, etc. If you didn't hear it, go check out Josh Levy on LinkedIn. Follow the Crunchers. Go follow Document Crunch on LinkedIn. Go to Trimble Dimensions. Be ready for what's coming next. Josh, I am looking forward to when we get to do this again and all those things are coming to fruition, because I'm piecing them in my head and have been, and I've gotten to be here. And for that, I want to say thank you for taking me along with you, being a friend, and then also being, you know, a mentor to me over the time and being honest and open. And it's been just a lot of fun, man. It's been a great ride.
Well, I could say all the exact same things, man. I'm grateful for you. I think you do an amazing job holding me and others accountable to actually do good work. And we're just getting started, Jeff. I'm so excited about the future. And again, I'll just reiterate, if you all don't know, now you know, Trimble is for real. the Crunchers are coming to go big. And I am just like, I just feel so alive, man. It's very clear that this is the next episode, to quote my boy, Dr. Dre. I'm ready for it. I hope you are, man. But I'm not going anywhere. You're not going anywhere. And I just would challenge you and everybody out there, like, let's just keep pushing this industry forward. We can do it. Build those relationships. Focus on treating people the right way. Stay true to what you believe in. If you're listening, you can do this. It doesn't matter. You don't have to be a founder to do it, but we're all industry stakeholders. So do your part.
Thank you so much. And it will be back. And thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for our interview with Josh Levy. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to the show, visit thecontentcrew.com. This is The Content Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.